renegade economist is saying, yeah.
Economics for activists. Economics is being made. Economics. These are the tools activists need. How can we calculate it? What motivates them? Why do people spend money? Understand the basics to economics.
Today we're speaking to Joel Simo from the Melanesian Land Defence Group. They're touring Australia, talking up about Melanesian rights to the earth and fending off the neo-colonialists that are storming the studio with land speculation. Welcome, ladies and gents. My name's Carl Fitzgerald. Yes, in the hot seat today, talking up a big week in the news on housing affordability. The Age ran a special last week on Project Melbourne. It was all about how can we ram more and more people into our city and keep it affordable. And over the last couple of weekends, I've been monitoring our auctions. And whilst the clearance rates have been at record levels, there's only been 11 properties on the weekend before last, the 21st and 22nd of March, 11 properties, but in the traditionally affordable range of $200,000 to $300,000. So that's 1.2% of all auctions in that level. And this week is a similar number. There were only 10 properties in that price bracket, and it's booming out there. Property prices are going through the roof, and we have predicted a downturn, and we still believe that prices cannot keep going like this. Even with high immigration rates, in the end, that will force the hand of, unfortunately, the first homeowners who have bought at the wrong time have been suckered in. Lawyers, anyone from Pilch, we need your help to mount a misleading and deceptive case against the ALP Labor government, because they were advised by Saul Eslake. They already knew it, that a first homeowner's grant would push up the price of land. They went ahead to acquiesce the property lobby. And over the last couple of days, Tim Kolbach has followed up a few really good articles last week where he was talking about why, who on earth a rising property price is actually good for. And they're really good for no one except for banks and those who already own property, those privileged enough to hold multiple properties, multiple pieces of this earth. And Kolbach states that it used to be 20 years ago that investors accounted for just 8% of all money borrowed. That's right, just 8% of all money borrowed was used to invest in property. But with negative gearing coming along, these guys are now accounting for up to 40% of all debt. All loans taken out are for investors. And these guys are jumping in at these properties at $200,000 to $300,000. Knowing that they're going to have to double in, well, at least ramp up in price in the 20 to 30 to 40% sort of range over the next few years, because other properties around Melbourne are already well above that level. And so, yes, check out the article. It's called Housing at These Prices Will Leave Us All a Heavy Debt to Bear. And the staggering point was that home ownership in Melbourne among people aged 25 to 44 on middle incomes fell from 68% to 57%. In Sydney, the fall was even steeper, from 60 to 45%. So really, this tax game, ladies and gents, is a core influence on our behaviour, and we really need to push forward on keeping this government honest. The ALP traditionally understood that the earth was a privilege. We're all privileged to live here, and those who were lucky enough to own prime pieces of real estate should pay more than those of us who live out the back near the quarry. And this stopped fights between different classes, different groups of people, because it was seen as fair that one group would pay more than the other based on their location. This is called a land tax, we are taught to hate this with a vengeance by the 14 think tanks here in Melbourne, shooting down everything we do at Earth Sharing Australia and our parent body, Prosper Australia. So this week, just today in fact, we've launched an online petition in the lead up to the Henry Tax Review to try and ramp up the pressure on the government to really talk about what Ken Henry originally promised, and that was to include a federal land tax like the ALP had in their party platform up until the early 1940s. So this is a crucial missing ingredient from our economic toolbox. We can't rely on interest rates alone to curb the property boom. That just enhances negative gearing tax write-offs. So we have to give the Reserve Bank some extra added tools. And hopefully you can go to the website, tick a few boxes and help us push this forward. We're lucky to have Bob Brown going to read it into Parliament for us and set this in motion so we can apply some pressure. Check out prosper.org.au to fill out this petition. And in the world of criticizing globalization, it's very easy to take aim at America and tee off at them. But what on earth is Australia doing in our own backyard in this very Pacific? And today, with this very interesting tour coming through the country, thought it was opportune to interview Mr. Joel Simo, who heads up the land desk at the Vanuatu Cultural Centre, the much respected Vanuatu Cultural Centre. And Joel's a seasoned campaigner on land-based issues. We've started off this conversation getting him to give us a bit of an overview on how the privatisation of land title has affected Vanuatuan society.
The communities themselves deal with it. They have free access to the ocean, the beaches and all that for swim and all that stuff. But since 90s and 2000, it's like all the land, I'd say 97% of the coastal land of the FADA is all gone. To investors, fence off, people don't have access to their beaches anymore. If you travel around the FADA via the southeast part of the island, you'll find that all the beaches, that all the beautiful beaches that were there for people to access is no longer available for people anymore. So there's a big problem there, very big problem. And I have some people working with me who are people from, I mean, a young fellow who is from the village of Pango, just outside of Port Vila. And what the experiences that he shared with us is, you know, all the beaches are gone. So they're just sitting there, you know, complaining and not knowing what to do. Because if they want to take the person who was released to court, it's a lot of money. It's not, they don't have that money to take the case to court if they want to.
I know that in the Pango Beach development, they even reclaimed some of the beach. They built out into the surf and claimed extra land illegally, but nobody can say anything because they don't have enough legal help.
Exactly, that's what's happening. And if right in front of Pango Village, not before you enter, but up at the front of the village, where the point where the village is, a lot of this land has been, you know, they got gravels to bury them, and then extended out to the where the surfs are, and it's not really safe because when you have huge cyclones, and we have cyclones every year, this, you know, the sea just washed the whole thing away. So they put them on internet and you see them very looking very beautiful, but then the actual dangers that are there, not, you know, they never tell the people who are going to buy them, I mean, the customers, that these are the dangers that you'll be facing.
The urban drift of young people coming to the city must be putting a lot of pressure on the local council and the local people.
That is exactly what is happening. A lot of young people, you know, come from different islands in the group. to the city looking for jobs that are not there, and that is putting a lot of pressure on the government and the locals, I mean the people who are the indigenous people of the island, because all the land that is given out to investors and developers is the place is, you know, the people are being sandwiched in. I mean, the people who belong to the island itself, you know, they have very little place to live now, and people are coming, piling up on them, and that's becoming a very big problem. And I guess one of the things that, you know, issue about these young people treating to the island is the sort of education that is, the education system. I think it's something that needs to be addressed, because people are being educated to see things from a foreign perspective and not see the importance of the land and that the traditional economy that they have with them, and that's why a lot of young people tend to migrate to town to find jobs that are not there.
What would be the biggest employer of people in Vanuatu at the moment?
I would say land is the biggest employer. The traditional land tenure in Vanuatu is the biggest employer, and that is why I think the system is wrong, because people have to understand that the land that is there, that it has sustained people for thousands of years, and it still is. So apart from cash economy, there is no... Every company, so investors or whatever, developments that are taking place in Vanuatu, are, you know, compared to land itself, land is the biggest employer in Vanuatu. It employs 97% of the population, and that is on subsistence economy. So, and that is not included in the GDP itself. So, it's only the minority, I mean, that maybe the 3% that is in the main centers are those ones that are included in the GDP, but they fail to see that land has been sustaining people all along. And example is the global crisis. You know, people in Vanuatu, in the rural areas, don't even feel anything. I mean, they were not affected by the crisis itself.
Yes, they could still grow their crops. They could look after themselves because they had their own seeds.
Yeah.
And there's still enough fish left there. So that is crucial to a nation's independence. And it seems that many people say that foreign investment is vital for jobs. But how many jobs are created through investment in real estate?
Very good question. I believe there is no job provided in real estate, I mean, in the investment of real estate, because what they set up is resorts. And resorts, it doesn't even take everybody in the village who own the land to be, you know, people who work in the village. I mean, people in the village, they don't work in these resorts. And it's only a few, and if not, people from other places, they come and work there when, in fact, they promise the villages or the people who own the land that they'll have jobs. And once the agreement is signed, other people come in to get the jobs, and they don't have the jobs themselves. And a very good example is some weeks ago, I was on the other side of the island running a workshop on Lelepa, and they gave an example. A lady who was working for one of these resorts in Havana Harbour was telling us that the village people, I mean the people who own the land, are not even working with them, because they've created a lot of problem with the resort owners, so they were not included. So this real estate thing is not really creating jobs for the people, it's just for the rich. I mean, they become buy land and build holiday homes, mansions, and then nobody's there, just the house girl or whoever is a caretaker, and they are off. And these caretakers are paid pathetic wages.
And so are the Nevans who build those houses. I was shocked to see that many of the builders were paid less than the minimum wage in Vanuatu to build these mansions that then are sold for 500,000 Australian dollars, and the local landowners, how much would they get out of that money?
Well, I've seen some example up in Sando where an investor came in, bought a huge plot of land for about 37 million Vatu. What he did was he subdivided the land, and each a plot is sold for 37 million. So he divided that up. I mean, he subdivided up to 37 plots and lots, and then he sold that one plot for 37 million. And what the landowners get for the payment for the land that's been, the rent for the land is 1,000 vatu a year for one of those plots. There is a very big margin there. The person who sold that, who's the owner of the subdivision, pockets a lot of money.
A huge amount of money.
Yeah, I got this from the lands department office there, and so I was able to have access to them. And the beaches along where these subdivisions are no longer, it's like it's a no-go zone. You go there, they'll chase you out. Nobody allows to go on the beach there. You have to have a good reason to go there, especially the local landowners themselves and the people who normally go there for holiday, I mean, just for holiday and recreation, all that stuff. People are no longer allowed in there.
We're talking to Joel Simo about land issues in Vanuatu. This is happening all throughout the Pacific, isn't it? And you're here in Australia to discuss the Melanesian Land Defence Group. Can you tell us what this is about and how you are pushing forward this message of sovereignty and freedom for the Pacific?
Land is our independence. It is what makes us who we are. It holds our culture, our customs, and our identity. And that's what makes us unique. If that customary land is taken away from us, then that's when we become nobody, because all these things are taken away. And with customary land in place, we don't need to go to cities to find jobs. Land is always there to sustain us, and that's what we are trying to campaign against. This individualization of customary land, because once land is leased out, it becomes legalized, and then it's only under one person, it's under one person's name, and when in fact land is our land, not my land. And this notion of legalizing land system is becoming, you throw fences around, you are enclosing the land, you are excluding others from the land. So that's where the problem is. If you start to exclude people from the land, then we're creating a group of landless people that was not there in the first place.
One's building the ring road around Afate. Is that really assisting the land speculators?
The initial promises that they gave us was it's going to provide a lot of incentive for the local women who were supplying the markets in Port Vila. And the idea was that the prices of the local products would be cheaper because the roads are good, and that hasn't changed. It's the local foods in the market are skyrocketing and the prices are very high. So, but what came out very clear is that it's only to pave the way for developers who are setting up resorts around the island. That's very clear.
On top of this, Vanuatu and the Pacific faces PACER Plus, the upcoming free trade agreement, which aims to reduce tariffs. Government is struggling to pay its bills, and that must put a lot more pressure on you. You must be having to deal with a lot more people because there's no government people to help with land disputes, family issues, and all these sort of things that result when the land gets locked up.
The problem is, I think the government is so, it becomes a puppet. It's very dependent on handout. I mean, the aids from outside, and whenever there is no funds available, then the people just sit there, sitting that they sit there, they don't do any work. For example, right now we have this, when there was this land summit in 2006, we were assigned to carry out awareness in Vanuatu. That's Malfatu Council of Chiefs, Malfatu Maori Council of Chiefs, the cultural centre, and the government. We were to go out to raise awareness on land issues and what is affecting the people and what are the appropriate ways to get the lease and all that stuff. And since then, they have done very little. There was no awareness coming from their party. They've never gone out to the communities to do the awareness, because what they were saying was that the money that hasn't come in from Mosaic to fund the whole thing, so they were just sitting there waiting for money to come in.
And you can hear Joel Simo and Stephen Sukot from Papua New Guinea speaking at the Australian Conservation Foundation First Floor Green Building 60L, Leicester Street, Carlton, this Thursday, 6:30 to 8 p.m. What troubles, what challenges Indigenous people have?
So far, I have seen no leases in Pislama. Just a week ago, 2 weeks ago, my group went up to an island in Malakula, where there is an old man that signs off about a few thousand hectares of land for certain development, and the lease that was given to him to sign was all in English, and this old man is not, I mean, he's illiterate, so I don't know if he knew what he was doing. There was nothing in Pislama. That was just some weeks ago.
To feel for our Pacific Island neighbours, because they're facing the privatisation of all of their natural resources in an accelerated fashion. Just over the last 30, maybe 40 years in Papua New Guinea, mining companies have come through and stripped them out, aid projects masquerading as helping people, as you're hearing in this interview, really are just acting as a highway to strip out their resources, to harvest their land values through land speculation as well.
Well, I guess there is a lot of push for the Pacific, especially Melanesia, to free up their land for development purposes. The question that is there is whose development, who's going to benefit from it, and why all this push? The government's policies have investor-friendly environment, and that is we have to allow for investors to come in to invest, and that is the only thing in the FINEA, they'll be investing on land. And so we people have to free up the land, and that is why they are pushing for this idea of get all the customary land registered, and then maybe it will be much easier for the investors to come in. So I think that's what is happening now. So it's really becoming something that is worrying a lot of us, because if we do that, then we become just like everybody else, wage laborers, and we don't have any, we are no longer independent to do our own thing the way we've always been doing.
What a tragedy we can't get those investors investing in jobs and places where people get real wages, but with so much money made in land speculation, this magic money, it's hard for them to ignore these easy profits they can make.
I guess one of the main, a big issue that is worrying us now, especially in our case in Vanuatu, is if we are not careful the way we are handling our land issues now, it's going to be like another Bougainville and the Solomons. And it's because the issue of land started the uprising in Bougainville, and it started this uprising in the Solomons. And I guess it's similar with it's the same thing with Fiji. If we are not careful the way we are going, it's going to blow up in our face.
I suppose the question for us here on the Renegade Economist is, who did create this land? Is it made to be profiteered from? Did not nature provide this for us? And following that, can we turn back the clock? Can we ask or expect governments like Vanuatu, who have virtually broke, having to shut down all sorts of departments week by week, it's a day-by-day proposition because their tax system is so ineffective. And as we talk about here, perhaps there is a way to find a happy medium between the two. And the best way to turn speculators away is to implement a land tax system. So if Pacer Plus does get through with all the dodgy loopholes that are coming, the government should look to increase land taxes to capture some of this naturally increasing bounty. It's as plain as the law of gravity. If you add people onto a fixed land mass, the people living near the rivers, near the centre of town, are going to have a huge advantage over the rest of us. So they should pay something more back to the community to do that. Tax is a white man's word for sharing. Unfortunately, the whole system's become corrupted, it's well distorted, and we've really got to look for some long-term thinking to try and remove these boom-bust cycles. And we're confident that with the support of many independent economists, this original system, the way economics was designed by Adam Smith before his language was corrupted by the vested interests, it really was a battle against the feudal interests, those aristocratic families who own 80% of this planet. And when you see that just 5% of Australia's population are making millions and millions of dollars in profit each year as property investors, aka speculators, they're also being given millions of dollars in tax handouts. And this happens all around the world. It's happening in the Pacific. And at present, we have a unique opportunity to challenge that. Thank you very much for listening to The Renegade Economist. My name's Carl Fitzgerald. Yes, remember, the earth will always become more and more valuable. We must protect it. We must look after our community by removing painful taxes on business, on food, and placing them on natural resources where it is not possible to hide our taxes in a tax haven anywhere.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.